Welcome to HN Pod, your daily dose of the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Saturday, March 28th, 2026, which means we are covering the biggest stories from yesterday, Friday, March 27th. This is episode 348, and we have a really fantastic lineup for you today.
We really do. We are talking about a looming crisis in the consumer hardware market, an internal rebellion at Microsoft over Windows 11 accounts, a hilarious story of malicious compliance involving a blind man and an unstoppable fax machine, a deep dive into configuring Claude for your codebase, and finally, a blazingly fast alternative to the developer tool we all love to hate, JQ.
Let us kick things off with our top story, which pulled in a massive 582 points. It is an article by an author named Lucid Links, titled Hold On to Your Hardware. And Sarah, this one paints a pretty grim picture for PC builders and gadget lovers.
It really does. The author argues that the golden age of cheap, easily upgradable consumer tech is ending. And the main culprit? The AI boom and hyperscale data centers. They are calling it the ramp apocalypse.
Right. Companies like OpenAI, Microsoft, Google, and Amazon are buying up so much memory and storage that the consumer market is basically becoming an afterthought. The article noted that Western Digital's consumer revenue is now just 5% of their total sales. Their entire 2026 hard drive capacity is already sold out to enterprise and cloud clients.
That is wild to think about, and it's trickling down to everything we buy. The Raspberry Pi 5 had a massive price hike just because of memory costs. Valve is having trouble keeping the Steam Deck in stock. The author warns that we are moving toward a future where you rent your compute instead of owning it, pointing to things like HP's new laptop subscription service.
The Hacker News comments were super interesting on this one. A user named Barkel pointed out that we are seeing a massive divergence between data center hardware and consumer compute. They actually dropped $20,000 on a high-end desktop with a Blackwell GPU before prices spiked, just so they could have a local workstation that will last, and now they just use their laptop as a dumb terminal to remote into it.
A lot of commenters agreed that the middle market is getting hollowed out, but there was also an optimistic take. Some users think this constraint will drive innovation in the mobile and single-board computer space. Like, if you have a powerful phone and a good USB-C dock, maybe that just becomes your primary computer. It is going to be a fascinating few years for hardware.
Speaking of the computers we use every day, our second story is about the operating system running on most of them. Windows Central reported that people inside Microsoft are fighting to drop the mandatory Microsoft account requirement during Windows 11 setup.
This one hit 559 points, and it is a topic the Hacker News community is very passionate about. The article mentions this as part of a broader internal push to make Windows 11 better, but the comments really dug into the politics of it all.
Exactly. A user named Grujit D pointed out that this is a political fight inside the company, not a technical one. It is a battle between the division that wants to make a great operating system and the divisions that want to use Windows as a marketing channel to push OneDrive, Edge, and Game Pass.
And the frustration from users is so palpable. One commenter who works as a Linux system engineer said they actually prefer the Windows desktop experience for its window management and compatibility, but they are exhausted by the whack-a-mole game of turning off ads, avoiding Edge pop-ups, and having the OS resurrect disabled features after an update.
It really comes down to control. Another user noted that this trend started way back with Windows Genuine Advantage in the XP days, where the operating system started treating the computer's administrator as hostile. The phrase they used was, "Where do you want to go today?" has turned into, "You are going here today, whether you want to or not."
Though, to be fair to Microsoft, there was a really interesting counterpoint about accessibility in the comments. A visually impaired user chimed in to say that despite all the bloat, Windows accessibility actually works reliably, whereas the Linux desktop accessibility stack has been broken for years due to the shift to Wayland. So for some users, Windows is still the only viable option to get their work done.
That actually perfectly transitions us to our third story, which is a glorious tale of bureaucratic revenge. It is titled The Paperwork Flood, How I Drowned a Bureaucrat Before Dinner, written by Robert Kingett on his blog Sightless Scribbles.
I absolutely loved this one. It got 530 points. Robert has been blind since birth, and he received a continuing disability review from the government, basically asking for updated medical evidence to prove he is still blind.
Which is absurd on its face.
So he calls them up and offers to email a PDF of his medical records. The bureaucrat, who he jokingly calls Karen from compliance, flatly refuses. She says email is a security risk and demands he either mail physical copies or fax them. She assumes that forcing a blind man living below the poverty line to use a physical fax machine will just make him give up.
Big mistake. Robert is a nerd with an internet connection. He digs into his digital archives and compiles a single-spaced PDF of every medical record, surgical note, and therapy log since he was 5 years old. The file was 512 pages long.
Then he uses an internet fax service, sets the retry limit to infinity, and hits send. He just sits back in his apartment and imagines this old beige fax machine in a government office turning out page after page, running out of paper, running out of toner, just a relentless mechanical chant of malicious compliance.
2 hours later, the bureaucrat calls him back, breathless, begging him to stop the fax because it is jamming the machine. He pretends it is an automated security protocol he cannot stop, and she finally caves, snapping that they have enough evidence, and his file is updated.
The Hacker News comments were a mix of cheering him on and debating the nature of bureaucracy. Some people pointed out that you cannot really blame the low-level employee for not accepting an email because they are bound by strict health privacy laws and data loss prevention protocols.
True, but as another commenter who actually works in government pointed out, there is a specific type of mid-level bureaucrat who just cannot be bothered to make anyone's life easier. They have zero personal upside to action and some non-zero upside to inaction. It is just easier for them to say no. But Robert definitely found a way to make inaction very, very painful for them.
Moving from analog fax machines back to the cutting edge, our fourth story is a technical deep dive titled Anatomy of the Doc Cloud Folder by Avi Chawla. This one pulled in 399 points.
If you are using Claude Code, Anthropic's new AI coding assistant, you have probably noticed a Doc Cloud folder appear in your project root. This article explains how you'd actually use it as a control center to make the AI behave exactly how your team needs it to.
It breaks down the different files you can configure. There's the main claude.md file, which is basically the system prompt. You put your build commands, architecture decisions, and coding conventions in there. But the author warns to keep it under 200 lines, or the AI starts ignoring things and hallucinating.
Then there are the rules, commands, skills, and agents folders. The skills folder is particularly cool. You can define autonomous workflows, like a security review skill, and Claude will automatically invoke it when it notices you are doing something related to security in your prompt.
The discussion on Hacker News was really divided on this approach. A user named Dewey argued that building these complex AI agent toolkits is the new productivity porn. You know, spending hours tweaking your setup and reading blog posts instead of actually doing the work, only to be beaten by someone with a simple paper to-do list.
I totally get that perspective. Just asking plain Claude to write a plan, review it, and execute it works really well for a lot of people. But other developers pushed back hard. One user pointed out that if you are working on a 10 million line code base or a massive distributed system, these skills are a step function improvement.
Yeah, they said the real power is not necessarily in generating production code, but in rapidly building tools to pipe data, trace requests, and verify systems. When you have a library of debugging scripts for your specific project, teaching Claude how and when to use them via the .Claude folder is like having a senior engineer on call who knows all your internal tooling.
Our final story today is a classic Hacker News tool drop. It is called JSON Grip, a faster alternative to JQ, and it got 370 points.
We all know JQ. It's the ubiquitous command line tool for parsing and transforming JSON. But the author of JSON Grip, Micah Kipe, built something fundamentally different. JQ interprets POTH expressions, which means it evaluates the query at each node and recursively descends into branches.
Right, which can be slow on massive files. JSON Grep, on the other hand, treats the JSON document as a tree and your query as a regular language. It compiles your query into a deterministic finite automaton, or DFA, before it even looks at the JSON.
That is the secret sauce. Because it uses a DFA, it walks the JSON tree exactly once, taking a single state transition at each edge. There is no backtracking, no recursion stock, just a single pass. The benchmarks in the article show it absolutely smoking JQ, JME's POTH, and other tools on large datasets.
The author is very upfront about the trade-offs, though. JSON Grep is strictly a search tool. It does not do transformations, filtering, or math like JQ does.
But the comments quickly turned into a group therapy session about how impossible JQ syntax is to remember.
It is so true. One commenter compared JQ to the sed command. You only use 1% of it 99% of the time, and you have to look up the syntax every single time you use it. Someone called it a Turing tar pit.
People were sharing their white whale JQ queries, like trying to convert a JSON array to a TSV file. It is incredibly powerful, but it definitely does not fit the mental model of a standard Unix pipeline. That is why tools like JSONGREP, or Google's Common Expression Language, which was also mentioned in the comments, keep popping up. Sometimes you just want to find a value without writing a PhD thesis on the command line.
Well said. And that brings us to the end of today's episode of HN Pod.
We hope you enjoyed this dive into the RAMpocalypse, bureaucratic fax wars, and the endless quest to parse JSON just a little bit faster.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to check back tomorrow for more of the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. Have a great day, everyone.